Welcome to today's SNEB Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you could join us for Journal Club today. A little bit of housekeeping to get us started. If you look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see handouts, and the slides for today are there for you to download so you can take notes and follow along. We'll take questions at the end of the presentation, so please type those in the question block. And when the webinar ends, there'll be a short survey, and we appreciate your feedback on this session, as well as ideas for future webinars. And then watch for an email, should be Wednesday of this week, with a link to the recording that we're making, the webinar slides, as well as the CEU certificate that you're earning for your attendance today. So I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is Assistant Teaching Professor at the University of Illinois.
Thanks, Rachel. Today I get to introduce Urshila Sriram. She received her PhD in Community Nutrition from Cornell University and currently works as a Program Specialist at Texas A&M AgriLife Research. Her research interests focus on designing and evaluating community-based programs to ensure equitable access to nutrition and health services. As a registered dietitian, she hopes to integrate community-based research and dietetics practice to improve population health outcomes in limited resource settings. Today, she is going to be sharing her work on process evaluation of Strong Hearts Healthy Communities, a rural community-based cardiovascular disease prevention program. And I want to thank her for joining us today. And if you have any questions, please type those into the question box, and I will moderate to those to her at the end of the session today. At this point, I can hand it over to Urshila.
Thank you so much, Kristen, for the introduction, and thank you to Rachel as well. Thanks, everyone, for taking the time to join this webinar today. I hope you're all doing well wherever you're calling in from. As Rachel mentioned, today I'll be talking about a mixed methods process evaluation of the Strong Hearts Healthy Communities program. And I'm happy to be presenting on behalf of Dr. Rebecca Segan Fowler and our colleagues who co-authored this manuscript with us. Cardiovascular disease is the leading cause of mortality in the United States. Despite advances in treatment and prevention, geographic and gender disparities persist. Rural populations, particularly women, experience higher rates of cardiovascular disease and health risk behaviors, such as physical inactivity. These disparities are partly attributable to environmental conditions, such as limited access to healthy food, physical activity resources, and medical care. Due to geographic isolation and economic constraints, people must often travel further to utilize available facilities and may be unable to afford those to which they have access. Inadequate community infrastructure and financial constraints further contribute to health disparities by impacting transportation to health services, availability of care providers, and insurance coverage. There is strong evidence suggesting that improvements in health behavior can significantly reduce the risk for cardiovascular disease. Community-based interventions have been shown to improve health behaviors among rural women. Although there are many definitions of the term community-based, we refer here to interventions that are implemented in physical community settings, such as towns, neighborhoods, schools, or churches. Existing interventions have focused primarily on individual level behavior change, rather than addressing environmental factors known to influence health behaviors. Individual level approaches are often limited in reach and sustainability and fail to address multi-level determinants of health. Thus, interventions to decrease cardiovascular disease risk should focus on both individuals and their environments. When designing and implementing community-based interventions, it is important to evaluate implementation processes. And by that, I'm referring to how the intervention was delivered, as well as successful or challenging aspects of program delivery. also referred to as process evaluations, these studies are essential for understanding intervention effectiveness. However, few studies have assessed implementation processes in rural settings. Process evaluations typically include quantitative assessments of reach, fidelity, dose, and satisfaction. Integrating quantitative and qualitative data from multiple sources is often recommended, however, to provide a more comprehensive assessment of implementation. Qualitative methods, such as focus groups, allow participants' experiences to inform intervention modifications. By documenting successful and challenging aspects of intervention content and delivery, qualitative findings can tailor intervention components to meet specific community needs. An additional challenge to behavior change intervention programs is that they are often unavailable or financially inaccessible in rural areas. Other challenges to program delivery may include transportation barriers, space constraints, and limited food and physical activity resources. Offering low-cost programming to rural women may help reduce these disparities in resource availability. Thus, there is a need for intervention approaches that address environmental factors and evaluate implementation processes in rural settings. The objective of the present study was to conduct a mixed methods process evaluation of a community-based cardiovascular disease prevention program for rural women. This work was conducted as part of a community randomized trial to reduce cardiovascular disease risk among rural women in Montana and New York. The program is entitled Strong Hearts, Healthy Communities and was conducted from 2015 to 2016. Strong Hearts, Healthy Communities integrated core concepts from three evidence-informed programs that were developed for rural populations. These included Strong Women Strength Training, which is a nationally disseminated strength training program through cooperative extension networks. Strong Women Healthy Hearts, which consists of aerobic exercise as well as didactic and hands-on nutrition education. And the Heart Club, which is a civic engagement program to promote changes in food and physical activity environments. Focus groups, key informant interviews, and community assessments conducted in partnership with local health educators informed the integration of program components. The Strong Hearts Healthy Communities Intervention Program was designed to act on multiple levels of the socioecological framework, as you see depicted here. Individual level components included strength training, aerobic exercise, nutrition education, and behavioral strategies, such as stress management and goal setting. These components addressed rural-specific barriers to healthy eating and physical activity. For example, emphasizing indoor exercise options, particularly during the winter months or during periods of inclement weather. And also utilizing ingredients from local food stores in meal planning or class recipes. Social components included the group-based intervention class structure, having family-focused activities such as take-home exercises and healthy home cooking tips, as well as strategies for enhancing social support from friends, colleagues, and family members. Finally, the intervention targeted the community environment through community assessments, local community resource guides, and civic engagement activities to support changes in the local food or physical activity environment. We enrolled 194 women from 16 medically underserved rural towns in Montana and New York. Towns eligible for participation were classified as rural based on a rural-urban commuting area code of 7 or higher, and were designated as medically underserved. Populations per town ranged from around 500 to 6,000, with an average of 2,000 residents per town. 8 towns were randomized to the full Strong Hearts Healthy Communities intervention, while the remaining 8 towns participated in an educational-only minimal intervention. This was purely didactic, with no in-class exercise sessions or skills-based nutrition education. Strong Hearts Healthy Communities was delivered to intervention participants twice weekly over 24 weeks for a total of 48 sessions. Control group participants attended one session per month for a total of 6 sessions. Local health educators with extensive program delivery experience were chosen to serve as program leaders in each participating town. Educators were affiliated with cooperative extension offices or rural healthcare centers and were members of the local community. They completed training in human subjects research, study procedures, and curriculum facilitation through in-person workshops and interactive webinars. Our leaders also received a comprehensive guidebook that included the full program curriculum and any materials needed for facilitation. Leaders were responsible for recruiting eligible women, assisting with screening and data collection procedures, and facilitating program classes. Recruitment strategies included flyers, direct mailing, website posts, and word-of-mouth referrals. Our eligibility criteria were women aged 40 and older who were currently sedentary with a BMI of 25 or higher. Implementation was assessed using a mixed methods evaluation design. We focused in this study on the 8 towns that received the full intervention program. So that's the sample I will be talking about going forward. Evaluation components included after-class surveys, which were completed by leaders, post-program satisfaction surveys completed by participants, and focus groups with participants at each site, as well as interviews with program leaders. Our process evaluation measures were adapted from Saunders and colleagues, as well as the UK Medical Research Council's process evaluation guidelines, which were recently published. I will go through in the next few slides each of the 7 measures that we used. I will define the measure and then discuss how we calculated it for this particular study. REACH was defined as the proportion of individuals participating in the intervention. And this was calculated as the number of intervention participants in each town divided by the total number of eligible women and converted to a percentage. We obtained the number of intervention participants from study enrollment records, and the number of eligible women in each town was estimated from U.S. Census data on the percentage of women age 40 and over at the town level, as well as behavioral risk factor surveillance system data on the percentage of overweight and obese adults at the county level. Adherence was defined as the percentage of intervention classes that were attended by participants and was assessed using attendance records from the after-class surveys. Fidelity was defined as the extent to which the intervention was delivered as planned, or the quality of program delivery, and dose delivered was defined as the amount of intervention delivered in any form, or the completeness of program delivery. These 2 measures were assessed using the after-class surveys. And just to go through how we calculated fidelity and dose delivered, I wanted to present an example calculation. On the after-class surveys, leaders were given checklists where they indicated whether each topic from every class was covered or not. So if I direct your attention to the topmost row, you'll see a sample class 1 that consisted of 4 topics. And this leader indicated that topic 1 was covered as prescribed, topic 2 was not covered, and topics 3 and 4 were covered but modified. Fidelity scores for each topic were assigned as followed: 0 points for not covered, 1 point for covered but modified, 2 points for covered as prescribed. So as you can see, looking at the second row for this hypothetical class 1, topic 1 would be assigned a fidelity score of 2, topic 2 would be assigned a score of 0, topic 3 would be assigned a score of 1, and topic 4 would also be assigned a score of 1. Dose delivered scores were assigned as follows: 0 points for not covered and 2 points for covered in any form. So this includes any adaptations or modifications that were made. Looking at the bottom row, you'll see that topic 1 was assigned a dose delivered score of 2, topic 2 assigned a score of 0, and topics 3 and 4 were assigned scores of 2. To calculate an overall fidelity score, we would sum the component scores for a given class. So in this example, the sum of the component scores would be 4, and then we would divide by the maximum possible fidelity score for a class. And with 4 topics and a maximum component score of 2, the maximum score for the class would be 8. So 4 divided by 8 is 0.5, or 50% fidelity for class 1. Dose delivered scores were calculated in the same way. Here we see that the total component score for dose delivered is 6. Again, the maximum possible dose delivered score is the same as for fidelity. So 6 divided by 8 gives us 0.75, or a 75% dose delivered score. Scores for all 48 classes in the program were then averaged to create overall fidelity and dose delivered scores for each site. And if anyone has any questions about this example, I'm happy to answer them at the end of this webinar. Our final two measures of process were dose received and program satisfaction. Dose received was defined as the extent to which participants were exposed to and receptive to the intervention. Exposure was measured as total time spent in class during the program and was assessed on the after-class survey. To measure receptiveness, leaders were asked to respond to the following question on a 5-point scale. In your opinion, how effective was this class for participants, ranging from 1, which was very ineffective, to 5, which was very effective? Program satisfaction was assessed both quantitatively and qualitatively. For the quantitative assessment, participants were asked to complete a post-program survey to assess their overall satisfaction and participation benefits. The survey also included a series of open-ended questions about their perceptions and recommendations for improvement. To gain more in-depth perspective regarding program satisfaction, we also conducted focus groups with participants and semi-structured interviews with leaders. The focus group and interview guides were designed to assess satisfaction with the Strong Hearts program, with a focus on suggested improvements and modifications. We conducted the focus groups via Zoom to accommodate travel constraints, minimize costs, and engage geographically dispersed participants. Many of our participants actually lived quite outside of the towns in which the program was conducted, and so we just wanted to make it easier for people to attend. And our interviews with program leaders were conducted via telephone. Focus groups ranged from about 60 to 90 minutes in length, whereas our interviews lasted about an hour, and all of these were audio recorded. Participant characteristics and our quantitative process evaluation measures were summarized using means and frequencies. We also looked at any demographic differences between survey respondents and non-respondents, as well as focus group attendees and non-attendees, using t-tests for continuous variables and chi-square tests of independence for categorical variables. Open-ended survey responses, focus groups, and interviews were qualitatively analyzed, as depicted below. The audio recordings and survey responses were first transcribed verbatim and cross-checked. We then developed an initial descriptive coding framework around relevant topics for the interview guides. The descriptive codes were grouped into 3 main categories: positive aspects of the program, negative aspects of the program, and recommendations for improvement. These initial descriptive codes were applied and then iteratively revised to incorporate any emergent themes. A subset of the transcripts were independently double-coded, and we found that observed agreement and adjusted kappa values were 98% and 95% respectively, which suggests high intercoder reliability. All of our coding decisions were systematically reviewed by three members of the research team, and any discrepancies were resolved as a group. Moving on to the results. So we had 101 out of the 194 participants who received the Strong Hearts Healthy Communities Intervention Program. Intervention participants were primarily non-Hispanic white, married, and either employed or retired. All of our leaders were female, non-Hispanic white, and had completed graduate level education. Overall reach of the program was 2.6%, ranging from 7% to 0.7% across sites. Program leaders reported high levels of fidelity to the Strong Hearts program with an average score of 82%. Our site-specific fidelity scores ranged from 80% to 89%, with the exception of Town 2, which had a fidelity score of 63%. Dose-delivered scores were only slightly higher on average than fidelity scores, which does suggest that most program components were delivered as prescribed, with limited modifications. Program classes lasted about 61 to 76 minutes for most sites, which was somewhat longer than the allocated 60-minute period. Leaders rated program classes as highly effective for their participants, with an average score of 3.94 out of 5. The site-specific ratings varied from neutral, 3.25 out of 5, to very effective, 4.68 out of 5. On average, participants attended 67% of program classes, and over half of participants attended more than 80% of classes. No demographic differences were observed between those with high attendance levels, defined as 80% or higher, and those with lower attendance levels, defined as less than 80%. A total of 74 participants completed the post-intervention satisfaction survey. Survey respondents were significantly older than non-respondents. However, no other demographic differences were observed. Survey respondents also attended a higher percentage of program classes as compared to non-respondents, 79% versus 37%. Most participants were satisfied with the Strong Hearts Healthy Communities program. Specific program components, such as the lesson content, were well received, and participants reported noticeable improvements in their fitness and eating habits. Participants discussed aspects of the program that they enjoyed, including camaraderie with group members and accountability to others, as well as exposure to new foods. They also reported some challenging aspects of the program, such as insufficient time to cover the class content and difficulty with certain strength exercises. Their recommendations for improvement included increasing class length, reordering some of the nutrition topics, and including more time for discussion. However, over 80% of women said that they would recommend the program to other people that they knew. We had 46 participants who attended the focus group discussions, and all 15 of our leaders participated in the interviews. Focus group attendees were more likely to hold college degrees and attend a higher percentage of program classes, 80% versus 57%. Our satisfaction survey ratings were comparable among attendees and non-attendees. 30 women who did not attend the focus group discussions responded to the satisfaction survey, and 2 participants who did not complete the survey were able to attend a focus group. Thus, we were able to reach 75% of intervention participants using both methods, as compared with reaching just 45% through focus group discussions alone. The following 3 slides will present some of the themes and accompanying quotes from the focus group discussions and the interviews with leaders. So we'll begin with comments related to the overall program. Feedback regarding the program was predominantly positive, with the content being described as thorough and well-planned. It covered a wide range of topics and was all very well put together, said one leader. most participants emphasized the camaraderie among group members, which really motivated them to make positive lifestyle changes. As one participant said, "It was so much fun. Just the support, it really provided the motivation I needed." Insufficient time to cover educational content was commonly viewed as a challenge among participants and leaders, and this was something we saw through the survey as well. As one participant mentioned, the classes were not long enough. If you're going to have education and exercise, you definitely need more time. Participants also felt that they would have benefited from discussing specific nutrition topics earlier in the program. The food portion, such as meal planning, would be great to start with, one leader said. That way, participants are really trying to make changes early on. In regards to physical activity components, participants and leaders expressed enthusiasm for the in-class exercise sessions, commending the gradual progression of intensity and limited equipment requirements. "The walking videos really give you what you need," said one participant. 30 minutes suddenly doesn't feel that long. They also benefited from the support of and accountability to group members. "It's a lot easier to do lunges and squats with the group than when I'm by myself," something that I'm sure we can all attest to. Many participants, however, did struggle to keep up with the fast-moving dance routines like Zumba and preferred the slower-paced walking videos. Several had difficulty completing the floor-based strengthening exercises due to mobility constraints. Some suggestions for improvement included increasing the variety of easy-to-follow aerobics videos and enhancing the consistency of the strength training exercises. It would be nice to get into a pattern, doing a set of exercises twice a week so participants get a continuous benefit. Adding more modifications to allow completion of exercises safely and effectively was another recommendation. Some participants weren't able to get down to the ground, so having alternatives for those folks would be important. And lastly, participants appreciated the range of nutrition topics and found the sessions on meal planning, portion size, and nutrition labels particularly helpful. "You're reading labels more," said a participant, "thinking more about portion size, so it was worthwhile." Class recipes and food demos encouraged the use of new ingredients when cooking at home. "Our leader made many snacks that I enjoyed, that I wouldn't have thought about eating on my own." Participants did suggest the need for more prescriptive guidance on incorporating healthy eating habits into daily routines. Many women expressed a willingness to prepare recipes on a rotating basis to reduce the burden on leaders. "Participants are willing to bring snacks," said one leader. "That will be excellent for our group, especially with limited funding." Additional recommendations included allocating more time to discuss nutrition topics. "We all knew a lot of the information, but when somebody would say, 'This has really worked for me,' we got a lot from each other." In summary, understanding the implementation of community-based health interventions for women is critical to improving intervention effectiveness, yet evidence from rural-specific contexts remains limited. Results from the present process evaluation offer some insight into program implementation in rural settings. High fidelity scores were observed across all but one of our intervention sites, and this level of fidelity was comparable to other behavior change interventions. This also supports the use of community health educators in delivering rural behavior change interventions. Overall, participants were satisfied with the Strong Hearts Healthy Communities program and would readily recommend it to others. They discussed the benefits of peer support and social interaction in keeping themselves accountable and motivated, similar to other group-based interventions. Most recommendations were related to integrating program components rather than contextual challenges, which really suggests that the Strong Hearts program adequately addressed some of those rural-specific barriers to implementation that I discussed in the introduction. Key recommendations included increasing strength training and exercise variety, changing the order of curriculum components, particularly the nutrition education topics, and allocating more time for instruction. Future iterations of the Strong Hearts program should include additional aerobic exercise DVDs, consistent strength training schedules, and earlier introduction of nutrition education topics, for example, within the first month. If possible, lessons should be extended or streamlined to allow for richer group discussion and more time to cover program content. We can look at study limitations in terms of external and internal validity. External validity refers to whether the results of a study are relevant to a more general population, while internal validity refers to the accuracy of the conclusions within a given study sample. In terms of external validity, findings from this process evaluation cannot be generalized to other rural populations or behavior change interventions. In terms of internal validity, it is possible that participants who chose to attend the focus group discussions felt more positively about the program, a form of selection bias. In addition, our measures of fidelity and dose were assessed only by program leaders, which may have positively biased the results. However, independent observations may also introduce bias if program leaders behave differently under observation. Self-report assessments do offer several advantages, such as time and cost savings. Designing programs that require reasonable time commitments from participants while providing adequate opportunities for skill-based learning and group interaction remains a challenge for behavior change programs. Online or telehealth approaches are often recommended for rural locations. However, in-person sessions were found to be an effective way to engage Strong Hearts participants. Other strategies for ensuring high fidelity and satisfaction include involving local health educators as program leaders, because these leaders are often well connected within their communities and can connect well with participants. Future evaluations should compare self-reported fidelity measures with observations to look at comparability between the two methods. Evaluations can also examine how context influences program implementation in more detail. Findings from the present study have guided curriculum modifications for a second phase randomized trial that showed notably greater intervention effects. Curriculum modifications included tailoring and reordering program components to accommodate participant time constraints and learning needs. We hope that these findings will ultimately inform the design and implementation of future behavior change interventions for medically underserved rural populations. I would like to conclude with a few acknowledgments. First, our program participants and leaders, without whom this study and our entire program would not have been possible. I would like to thank again my co-authors, Rebecca Segan Fowler, Kirsten Sandruder, Meredith Graham, Sarah Folta, Kristen Pulley-Blank, and Lynn Paul, for all of your support and guidance in co-authoring this manuscript. I would also like to thank our Segan Research Group, formerly based at Cornell, now based out of Texas A&M AgriLife. I'd also like to thank our collaborators at Montana State University, Bassett Healthcare Network, and Tufts University. And finally, I would like to thank our funding sources at Cornell University and the NIH National Heart, Lung, and Blood Institute, as this study was supported by an NIH R01 grant. And with that, I would love to open it up for any questions.
Thank you so much for sharing your research. Mm-hmm. If anyone has any questions, please type those in the question box now. One question that I did have is, were the leaders in the same focus group that the participants were in?
They were not. So we did, just so that participants felt free to talk amongst themselves, it was just the participants in the focus groups. And since we also wanted the leaders' perspectives, we had the interviews with them, and those were actually one-on-one as well, so that leaders felt more comfortable talking to us.
Wait, so when you talked with the leaders themselves, you were just one-on-one, but with the participants, it was
yes.
more focus groups? Okay, that makes a lot of sense. Okay. So that was the main question that I had. I'll give another moment if anyone has any questions in the question box. Otherwise, I want to thank you again for sharing your research and thank you to everyone for attending today. It was great to learn about this project and all of the work that you did to make it happen. So at this, oh, you know what? I realized I can't see all of my question box. Okay. So one question that someone had is, can you provide some insight into why the program with a lack of fidelity did so? So the one had a lower fidelity score. Can you provide some insight into that?
Yeah, I can. That was definitely a question I was anticipating as well. So that particular site, I think the leader did her best there to really try and adapt the program to meet the participants' needs. So I think some of the lesson content, in particular the civic engagement activities, didn't resonate as well with participants. And so what she had tried to do is really just make more time for the in-class exercising, which participants really said they enjoyed the most. And that was her way of just making sure that they gained the most out of the program and stayed motivated to keep on coming back. So she made that decision probably about halfway through the program just to either go over some topics more quickly or not cover certain educational topics to make more room for exercise.
And then the person who asked that question says, great job and thank you. Do you know for that site, was the satisfaction level higher or lower among participants, or were you able to look at it that way?
Yeah, so we were satisfaction level was a little bit lower. And I think, again, that came from the program not really meeting participant needs in that specific location. And again, the effectiveness scores were rated by program leaders, and then satisfaction came from participants specifically. So both the leader rated it as a little bit less effective and the participants were a little bit less satisfied than the other sites comparatively.
Okay. And then someone else wants to know if you have any results from intervention versus control at this time.
We do not. So we didn't actually look at intervention versus control for this particular process evaluation. However, in our follow-up study that I mentioned, we will be looking at both the intervention group and the control group as well.
Thanks. And I believe that is all the questions we have for today. So at this point, I will pass it back to Rachel. Thank you again for sharing with us.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Kristen.
Yes, thank you for sharing your work. Just a little bit of housekeeping to close this up. Please complete the survey you see when we close down the webinar. Your feedback is appreciated. And look for an email on Wednesday of this week with the recording, the handout, and your CEU certificate. And then Journal Club actually takes a spring break next week. So no webinar next Monday, but look at the calendar. We'll be back in 2 weeks, and we hope to see you then.